Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm really happy that you guys are here today. So thank you guys for joining us and welcome to the Food Lovers Elective, a Craft conversation series. At Craft, we seek to foster a transformative regional food system in Western Pennsylvania that recognizes the central role of food systems in our society and values of the people who live and work within them. We envision a food system that is equitable, fostering fairness and transparency across the value chain, a system that is sustainable, actualizing economic, social, and cultural well-being as part of the food system, and a food system that is inclusive, valuing dignity, sovereignty, and the inherent power of all people. Today's episode is Nourishment via Art, Food, and Activism, Creating a Deeper Sense of Community Through Expression. As Lindsay Herring is going to be speaking with Kate Eminger, the creator director of Space on Ryder Farm. This episode will take about an hour with the last 10 to 15 minutes reserved for Q&A. Please feel free to engage with each other, your fellow audience members or with Lindsay or with Kate through the chat. If you have questions, please enter them on the Q&A section that is on the bottom of your screen. The chat button is also on the bottom of your screen. It's like a little talk bubble. All right. I'm excited for this episode. So now we'll hand it off to Lindsay and I hope you guys have fun. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I am so excited to join you today and to join Kate. This is a topic that I've been very interested in for a while now. So it's great to talk to someone who's working in the field. As you saw from the slideshow before, I am currently a grad student at Chatham University studying food studies. My undergrad was in musical theater and dance. So let's get to the show. So Space on Ryder Farm is an art residency, particularly for the theater arts. And Kate, looking at your bio, I have so much adoration for you and your career. And I just wanted to thank you for your time on coming on today and talking to us all. As someone who studied musical theater for their undergrad degree and now is studying food studies, I'm seeking to combine both of them. And you seem to have been able to do just that. When I started this program at Chatham, I thought I had to leave the theater and art realms. And through programs like Space, I now know it's possible to combine them both. And it helps me know that the arts and food and activism, they don't have to live separately. And in fact, whenever paired together, can have significant impact. We talked earlier, and I also know that you directed The Wolves, which is one of my favorite plays I ever had the chance to be in. You've been a part of so many lovely organizations and events, from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival to Club Thumb in New York City. So if you wouldn't mind telling the audience a bit what Space on Ryder Farm is, and how you became involved, and how are you involved today?
Sure. Thank you for that lovely intro. I'm excited to speak to you today. It's interesting how I came to have this resume that is sort of so unique. But I feel that we are sort of kindred spirits in that way. So I can speak a little bit about Space on Ryder Farm. I'm currently the creative director. I started in 2016 as a resident chef. And that was a temporary seasonal position. So I've sort of been there 5 years and my role has changed a lot, which I can talk about what that was like. But in general, so Space on Ryder Farm, you said it great. It's a nonprofit artist residency. It operates on a organic farm. And the unique thing about Space on Ryder Farm is that the farm itself has been in the Ryder family for 226 years. It is one of the oldest family owned and operated farms on the East Coast continually without any kind of, government sales or anything of land in that way. I should also point out that the land that Ryder Farm exists on is the land of the unceded land of the Wappinger people, who inhabited the Hudson Valley, New York area, for thousands of years. And then, a little bit of history, they, participated somewhat in the Revolutionary War with the understanding, the false understanding, I guess, that they would get their land back. Loyalists took over the land, and pushed the Wappingers out, British loyalists. And then when the loyalists lost the Revolutionary War, that land went to the state, and was purchased, by a Dutch trader who hired a writer to come work on the land and be a tenant. He eventually took over the land in 1795. And that has been in the writer family ever since. So it's really unique history. We operate, so there's 127 acres of lake frontage, forest, and about 10 farming acres currently. There is a barn that was built in the in about 1911, and then a farmhouse built in 1795 that is still fully operational, as well as a couple of other housing structures that we use to house artists and farmers and all the like, chefs as well. And space in on Ryder Farm, the artist residency was started in 2009 by Emily Simoness, who is herself a writer descendant. And she was an artist, she was an actor in New York City. She came up here after she got an acting degree and had always heard about the farm in her family's legacy in her family's conversation, but had never been there. So her and some actor friends got on a train. You can get on a train here in New York City and be up on the farm in about an hour and 20 minutes. So its proximity really is unique in that it allows artists to come up from the city very easily and yet feel very far away. And she came to the farm and she noticed two things. One, that it was a place that needed a little bit of TLC. Some of the buildings were in need of help. Some of, you know, the land was still being farmed, but the physical plant itself was falling into disrepair. And two, that she had a lot of playwright friends and a lot of artist friends, a lot of musician friends who were eager and really just thirsting for time out of the city to work on their work. So the residency itself began as a work share. So the artists would come up, they would scrape some walls, they would paint, they would help haul away some garbage. And in return, they would get a meal cooked for them out of the 1795 kitchen, residency kitchen, and also time and space to work on their work. And since then it has grown. And so of course it started in the theater. It's like primarily theater focused because that's where Emily's core group was at the time when she started this work. But since has grown into a place where artists of all disciplines come and sit at a table together and work on their work and eat three meals a day, as well as activists and parent artists as well. So we have programming that sort of is keyed into some different demographics that we felt would find time away in a residency useful. And in addition to that, in 2019, Space on Ryder Farm, the farmer, the writer who was farming the land since the 1970s decided to retire. So Space as a nonprofit entity took over the farm and runs both aspects now. So the artist residency and the farm had always worked in tandem, but now they are operated by one group of people. And I should also note about the farming, just to say that the Ryder family was an early adopter of the organic movement. So back in the early 80s, they started doing organic farming and they were one of the early vendors at the Union Square Market in New York City and one of the only vendors offering organic vegetables for a very long time. So they have always been unique in that as well. Yes, so that's Space. I could probably go into a lot more detail, but I will tell you a little bit about my involvement. So yes, I'm a director by trade. I was in grad school in New York City at the New School, getting an MFA in directing in 2016, and I had a summer available to me where I wasn't working on anything. And I thought, this organization that I've always heard about as an artist really appeals to me, because it seems like everybody that I know about whose work I admire is going up there. So I did a little digging and applied offhand to an internship there, thinking that it might be a little out of my age range, because I think it was mostly offered to undergraduates at the time, but just kind of wanting to talk to somebody and see what it was like, you know, kind of like you're doing here. And so, like, just, I'm just curious. I was just curious. So I applied. And another thing I should say about myself is that I'm not a professionally trained chef. I was trained in my mom's kitchen. I was making big meals with her. I'm from Texas, so there was a lot of big family meals. And I was doing Thanksgiving on my own by the age of like 13 or 14. So like big gatherings, big meals have just been part of what has been bred in me and something that I love so much. So fast forward to me in this interview and asking about the kitchen residency and what that was like. And they happened to need a chef that season. So I offered to do that. So I didn't get the internship, but I offered to step in as a chef. And it was as soon as I started working in the kitchen, I felt immediately at home and immediately as though this was somewhere where I had been yearning to discover in my own career path, but had no idea existed. I was able to cook those big meals, practice, you know, all kinds of different cuisines that I had never cooked before, pull a carrot out of the ground, walk 20 feet, put it in a pan, you know, all of those amazing things about farm cooking. But in addition to that, I was sitting down at the table with playwrights and actors and directors and folks that I had admired for a really long time. And I was getting paid for it. So I was like, this is a win-win. I stayed for several years in the residency chef program, coming back summer after summer. And then it became clear, as many nonprofits are a bit bare bones when it comes to staff, it can be a bit of an all hands on deck kind of experience. And they needed somebody to do some of the things that I had had skills in through my directing career, through my education, video editing for fundraising videos, graphic design for events, helping, you know, plan and produce events, things like that. So I started to freelance for them in that capacity as well around 2018, and worked my way into this role called the food program coordinator, which I made up, but was really just, I was the person at that point who would interview and hire the chefs for the resident chef program and manage the kitchen. And then the pandemic happened and, you know, it's like, I'm always like, do I really want to talk about the pandemic narrative? But it's important to this story because all my directing work dropped out from under me. Though I told earlier, I was talking to Lindsay, like The Wolves was the last performance that I directed and I only got to see one performance of it and then it was canceled.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It was in early March of 2020.
Oh my
God. So yeah. And so, so I have actually really visceral feelings for that show because it was so emotional to watch the one time knowing that we weren't going to move forward and no one knew what was happening, obviously. And then I had other things lined up and those all got canceled, of course, including a show that I was deeply passionate about that I had been helping develop with a playwright for several years that I sort of realized wasn't going to see the light of day because of the pandemic. And so I was sort of going through this like inner, like, what am I doing? How, you know, what is my career anymore? What is theater anymore? What is the industry going to be when we get on the other side of this? All of these questions I was having about the industry. And at the same time, Space was canceling its artist residency, refocusing on the farm and also reorganizing the way that the staffing structure worked. And in that became clear this need for a creative director, someone who could have their eyes on all creative aesthetic things, from like the blanket on a chair to the social media posts to all of that. And in addition, a communications person to tie it all together, to work with the farm team in their endeavors to work with the kitchen, culinary team and menu development, all of that. So it was kind of like a overarching role. And I thought, well, this is, I guess, the moment to move into that. So I did. And it's been over a year. And it's been a really exciting combination of all of my skill sets. So yeah, the journey has been intentional. And also, I just kind of jumped sometimes when I felt like there's a door open, I guess I need to jump, you know? So yeah.
Thank you so much for telling us all about that. That's really lovely. Something you talked about is, I find it really fascinating that you started in the chef residency program. And it kind of reminded me of undergraduate theater programs, which I'm not sure if you did that, but mm-hmm. for a lot of them, they want you to not just do acting. They want you to experience making costumes or working with lighting to kind of get a fuller understanding of how a whole production works mm-hmm. and to be able to talk to people who work in the different subjects and give you a deeper appreciation for it. And you working as a resident chef kind of made me think of that. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, how do you use your experience as a resident chef now that you are engaging with all levels of the Ryder Farm? And, you know, why do you want to engage with food through the arts? And why do you think that intersection is important?
Yeah, so many things. I'll say, like, on a personal level, I really quickly keyed into the cooking experience as similar to my experience directing a show in the most basic way, in that there are several ingredients, right? Lighting, costumes, actors, et cetera. And there are ingredients that you're working with. And so you put them all together and it makes a thing. But also, just the process in general has a similar trajectory kind of feeling to me, where you're sort of ideating with the taste of an ingredient. You're sort of working with two things. How do they work together? Same with actors, right? And there's this lovely, gorgeous experimental time where maybe you're creating a menu or maybe you're staging a scene. And then there's this very intense, like, 30 minutes before service where, like, everything's popping and everything's going at once. And you're like, your mind is firing at several cylinders. And that's exactly the skill I was using as a director during tech and preview, right? I'm like standing there talking at once to my team behind me, light, sound, all of it, and thinking in a wider view, how is an audience going to perceive this? And I think the same thought when I'm putting food on the table, because those folks are your audience, essentially, you know, and you're telling a story. I mean, people say this all the time, but you tell stories through food. And so what is the immediate impact of the plate on the table? What is the second impact of the bite or the combination of two things when they sit next to each other, whatever it is? And that's just so similar to theater making, because also food is ephemeral, theater is ephemeral, right? So. So we're very used to something, like, we create something with our heart and soul and it's meant to be consumed. And I think that's so beautiful. And not only is it meant to be consumed, but it doesn't exist afterwards. You know, you can't watch it again on a movie. I mean, you could probably record your theater piece, but purists would say that's not cool. not as good. Although if you got like Disney Plus involved, I'm sure it would be beautiful. But, you know, what I'm saying is that it's meant to be ephemeral, which is why it was so, you know, hard to lose so much of that piece of art during the pandemic, as well as food making for large groups. Thank you. Yes, Ani, I did give a Hamilton reference. I had to. So on a personal level, I just, like, those things just click for me all the time. And I'm sure you understand, like, when you're making a piece of theater, there is that correlation. You're also working with the team in the kitchen. You're working with, I mean, so much about it is collaborative. And so that's that. And I would say that The other thing that I find so interesting about what space is doing is that it's putting the artistic process and the farming process and the cooking process all on the same level and sort of comparing them to each other and saying, like, creativity is creativity and we want to foster creation, right? So so farmers and chefs, because chefs sit at the table of the meal that they made, which I think is very important. Chefs, farmers, and artists sit down to eat together, and they're all in the middle of their process, or at the end of their process, or the beginning of their process. Maybe the farmer has just started, whatever it is. And so when those experiences meet each other at the table, it's sort of hard to explain, but magic happens. And people find new facets of working with themselves or with their collaborators that they've never thought of before, or just have a conversation that gets them out of writer block somehow. You know, I mean, I've just seen so many things happen at that table, at that dinner table, because we are just saying, everybody, you're in the middle of your process, you're in the middle of your day, whatever it is, come sit down at a table, talk to the artist, eat the food from the ground that the chef has prepared, and that's where the magic happens. Did I answer your question?
That was lovely, thank you. And you actually, okay, you moved on to the next question I was going to ask, which was about communal meals, because I was just curious about how, you know, that required meal affects the artist's creation as well as the farmers and the chefs. You know, how does it impact their personal work whenever they come together? So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was sort of that idea. And I will say that it's like, if there was ever a cornerstone of space, it's that meal, because it does bring those three things together. And sometimes community, when we're not in a pandemic, the local community, is invited to participate as well in some meals and some events and things too. So there is always a coming back to that core value for us at Space. And it's just frankly magical. That's all I can say. Yeah.
I'm gonna move on a bit and actually to the community meals that you just talked about. It's awesome that you're going right along. I love it. I'm curious how this program is made accessible, and the art that is created through this residency, how is that made accessible to the public? For example, I know that Space hosts, at least before the pandemic, and I think you're starting up again, public events throughout their season, including like seasonal suppers and roving dinners. And I read that this roving dinner is an evening where farmers, the farm guests can enjoy the night and watch plays created by playwrights, I believe. And that's really cool. So I was just wondering how this audience engagement impacts the community and the farm and the artists.
Yeah, so definitely there are two facets, and I can touch on the events first, as you brought up. So always when we're thinking, because, you know, yes, there are farm to table dinners that are just that, you know, and it's usually a fundraising thing, because we are a nonprofit and there's a musician that probably plays and we're sort of cultivating that. But we do have a series of events, and yes, we are building up to it again out of the pandemic, a series of events that are focused on inviting the community to experience the art in the farm. In all of its unique ways. So the roving dinner is one example. So yeah, so we have one residency program called the Working Farm every year, which is solely for playwrights. And they come to the farm 5 different non-consecutive weeks over the season. And it all culminates in the roving dinner, which is where they get to feature about a 10-page excerpt of the play they worked on for those 5 weeks. So it's direct, like, deeply embedded in like what they have written while they are sitting on the farm. So many times we see like references in the plays pop up about the farm and the people. It's really interesting. And then it's a huge event in that the kitchen pulls, so there's 8 of those folks. The kitchen pulls out 8 courses that are inspired by those pieces of writing. So myself and the culinary director and the culinary team read everything. We talk about like, oh, this is like a, I don't know, to be really basic, this is New Orleans theme. Let's like think about New Orleans flavors, whatever it is. Sometimes it's more creative than that, obviously. And then we time those courses with the readings that are happening at various points on the farm. And the amazing thing about that is like, we've sat and listened to a play reading or a book reading or something like that. But this is like, a play about, you know, a like scary scene in a play, and it's happening like at twilight in the middle of a big field with like the sheep in the back, you know, like there's just this environment that you can't get anywhere else for these playwrights to trial these pieces that they've written. So that's a really magical night. And we hope to bring it back in its full capacity next year, but there might be a smaller version this year. We're still working it out. We're also doing an event this year, which will directly support the artists financially, in which we will do like a little art auction and a book signing and selling, and like all like those profits will go back to those artists who are participating in those things. So there are those ways of events. And then I will also speak to something that I'm really passionate about because I started it last year in the pandemic in its curation, which is so we have a harvest club, which is our word for a CSA. The harvest club has an art component to it. So folks that pick up their vegetables once a week from Ryder Farm, about 4 times a season, get pieces of art.
Oh my God. I love that.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's a really cool connection to the community. Something else I will say about the Harvest Club is that something we did during the pandemic was provide 50% of those shares of the CSA shares are free or subsidized to members of the community. And so we have a large number of Spanish speaking members and or English second language speakers. And so we get everything translated, all the books, all the art, everything is like, you know, for that community to enjoy with their vegetables. And so these are pieces also that we're commissioning from our alumni. So it's funny because tomorrow is our first art drop of the season. And so folks will get a print that this amazing artist named Kate Bloomquist made, where she borrowed a couple of sort of old pieces from the Sycamores, which is the 1795 farmhouse, and like did this sort of like print with it where it's like quilted. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I don't know how she made it. So everyone will get that print. And then another alumni, Michelle Moncayo, wrote a series of poems in both English and Spanish about the bus that she rides every day and the community that she experiences. So both of those will land in their vegetable bags this week. And I'm so excited to share it with them. And the cool thing about that too is people can purchase an art share without the vegetable component. And then that can be mailed anywhere. So they don't have to be local to participate as well. So there are these ways that we're hoping that we're like building up the integration of art and farming. With this art program. Yeah.
That's certainly good to know about the art being able to be purchased from anywhere else. So
yeah, you can definitely do that.
Something, a value that we're learning a lot about in our program is accessibility of food and topics and education. And for those who are unfamiliar with Ryder or these sort of programs like residency art programs on farms, but are interested in sustainability and connection with the land and making art, how can this become a reality for them? And, you know, how can someone like me do this, or someone who doesn't have the financial means or the ability to travel to do this?
Right.
Yeah. How can they implement these ideas and values that space has into their lives?
Wow. It's such a good question. I think something that space has done really well that I try to translate into my own life is to survey people, to meet people where they are, and to not assume that you know what they need, right? So my boss, Emily, is just an intense surveyor, a question asker, and is constantly gathering feedback from the different constituents that we experience on the farm all the time, whether it be artist members, community members, staff members, board members. I mean, she's just somewhat obsessed with gathering information, which is great. And then we take that information and we use that as a starting place to build these programs, right? So that's something that I feel like can be directly worked on in your personal life. If it's a goal to work on sustainability within your community, how can you do that? Ask questions of folks around you, of your city governments, of your neighbors, you know, what do people need, and meet those needs, meet those folks where they are. So that's a really important value. We also at Space, one of our core tenants is this thing called radical hospitality, which was born out of this kind of like host guest mentality that you have when you're hosting artists, and you want to make sure they have a nice pillow and that they're comfortable and all of these things. But beyond that, it's a way to live and to serve the people around you, right? So I'm not saying that you have to give everything of yourself so that everybody else is comfortable, but saying that you can work from a place of radical hospitality to ensure that you are upholding, you know, the value systems that you talk about in the community and with your friends and neighbors. And so, for example, you know, we do a little compost at the farmer's market down the street here in my apartment in Brooklyn, you know, and just, and we sometimes take our neighbors if they can't make it that day, you know, things like that, that will be something that you can look back on and say, like, this is something that I, you know, felt was radically hospitable towards myself and to the people around me. Yes. And then I would say, I mean, because obviously we're not all going to inherit 127 acres in the Hudson Valley to like build a thing, you know, like this. But what I will say is that the mentality that my boss had when she began Space was she looked at a place, she asked it what it needed. It needed some paint. It needed some trash cleaning up. And she said, great. Let's do it. And how can this experience also help this fill this huge void that I see these artists having, right? So looking for those places where there is a need and trying to fill it with gusto and with excitement and curiosity and of course questioning. I hope that answers your question. It's a bit tough because like it is a one of a kind place, mm-hmm. but the important thing to note is that there's a one of a kind of person that's going to go to that place and see that kind of potential and act on it. And so wherever you are in your life, it's about meeting that thing and seeing the potential, right? And like whatever it may be, it's might not be a huge organic farm, but it might be a community garden. It might be a supper club. It, you know, whatever, it might be a theater piece with food in it, you know, whatever you see the need being, just, you know, I just meet it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure. I think something so special about Ryder Farm and the residency is that it gives you permission as an artist and as a chef to just step back from what you're doing and fully envelop yourself in something that you care about. Because I know for a lot of artists, it's very easy to get, you know, to be run ragged by the day by day and just feeling stressed and not working on the thing that you're passionate about. So that's something I really love about it, is that it gives you that permission to say, okay, this is how I can be hospitable to myself. And this is how mm-hmm. I can share love with others and the thing that I care about with others. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think I have time for one more question from myself.
Cool.
But yeah, I think I'm curious for the artists themselves. What is your hope for them doing a residency through connection with the land and soil and gardening? Are you looking to enrich their lives and leave the program to continue the art? What are the values you hope the chefs and the artists carry with them? And why do you want to connect art with food?
Yeah, some big questions. So I will say that something that I haven't mentioned about the residency yet is that the artists are required to give back 2 hours of their time to either the nonprofit or the farming entity, so they can help with dishes, they can go out and harvest, they can help print some scripts with the administrative team, whatever it is. And that is just a piece of that initial work share that space was founded on, right? Where the artists were helping rehabilitate the spaces. So that has always remained. But something is the residual of that is this buy-in from the artists, especially the ones that go out and farm, which, let's be honest, most of them do, because it's the coolest thing that we offer that's so outside of the city. So most of them choose to go out into the farm, and what gets to happen is that they harvest tomatoes, and those tomatoes come to the kitchen, and then an hour or two later, those tomatoes are on their plate. And like that cyclical feeling of putting your hands in the dirt and then seeing somebody care for those ingredients and then getting to be nourished by those ingredients is, I think, one of the most restorative experiences that somebody can have on the farm. We've had people weeping over a beet, you know what I mean? because it's something that just artists don't get to experience so much, because there's so much hustle. From the outside, a lot of times it looks like artists are just like successful, or, you know, so she's so calm, she's so perfect in all of her interviews, whatever it is. And like, there's so much going on under that. And there's so much work to be done to support yourself as an artist, to define success for yourself as an artist. And that always shifts, right? Yeah. So to provide something for those artists where they get to sort of go back to that primitive experience, if that word feels right, to eating the food that came from the ground that was cooked by this incredible chef that's sitting right across from them. There's no sort of upstairs, downstairs feeling, like it's like everyone's communing, right? So back to that table experience. So in terms of like art and farming connecting, I think that's like the fire. And I will also add that I sort of spoke to this earlier, but like the connection, I mean, our farmers are artists, essentially. Like we count them as artists because they create these beautiful things, and they plan and they know, and like, and they work with sudden changes and elements and the wind and the rain and all of these things that can similarly happen in an artist's creative process. And then additionally with the chefs, the interesting thing about the chef program is it started with artists. So I was not the first artist to step into this residency chef role. It started with actors who liked to cook and have dinner parties sometimes, mm-hmm. who were just coming up to host and also work on their work. And still has that core value even in the chefs that come up today, but we also have chefs that are professionally trained we have a casting agent that comes sometimes who is a chef. We have an environmental scientist who loves to cook who comes sometimes. So there's not a rigidity to what it means to be a chef at space in terms of your pedigree or your training or anything like that. I think that's an important value because we also we also treat the artist residency program that way, in that like we tend to diversify people's professional sort of like trajectories sitting at the table. So you might have a recent graduate next to a veteran actor or whatever it is. And I will also note that the kitchen is residential. We don't have a commercial kitchen, and that is kind of the great equalizer, I think, with chefs, because they come in and they don't have all the fancy things, and you have a sous chef, but your sous chef is a fellow who has a varying degree of experience. And so you're teaching and cooking at the same time. And the feedback that we hear a lot of times, especially from our professional chefs that come in, is that that it is a great relief and sort of a back to basics feeling when they get in that farmhouse kitchen, and there's sort of, they just go back to like the things that they loved to make for themselves in their own home, and sharing that with people, the people on the farm, is what makes the food program so magical and so different, I think, than some of the other, maybe different from some of the other retreats or residencies and things like that out there that have kitchen programs. And so we keep it that way because we like the resident kitchen. It's just, it's homey and just the perfect environment for something like an artist residency.
Mm. And I feel like, yeah, people coming to a farm, especially after COVID, you know, what they want is something that is full of, you know, passion and heart and comforting. So that's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I will too say, just because this is of your interest as well, like the fact that we have artists that are also chefs is important because there's just like a boundary that's broken there. Right. And like, you can see the artistry in the food. And I'm sure you feel the same way when you're working, Lindsay, like the artistry of the experience of theater, whatever it is you do, makes its way into, you can't help it. You know, it's just, it's like there. And so it's like a point of conversation for the folks sitting down at the table. It's whenever you sit down at the table with everybody, 9 times out of 10, the conversation starts with the food. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and then blossoms from there, yeah, into all kinds of different directions.
One of the reasons I fell in love with food and creation of food is because I was very shy growing up and it was hard to talk to people, but everyone always loves talking about food.
So true. Yeah.
So
similarly, I felt like my family really gets along when there's food in front of them. So I was always food in front of my family. So we would gather, and like, it's that experience of gathering that you're really striving for. So, mm-hmm. So I totally, totally understand.
Cool. So I think it is time for us to move on to a few, attendee questions. And the first one is, who creates the dishes inspired by the written plays? Is it a process that involves you as well as the artist who wrote the play, or is it the chef?
I can speak to the pre-pandemic version of this because we don't have a post-pandemic version yet. But the pre-pandemic version was that, yes, so the artist would send the script to myself, and typically for the roving dinner, we have about 4 or 5, we have a head chef and then 4 or 5 sous chefs going on. And this is where we do higher end, you know, like we get our whole cohort together to create the 8-course meal. And so everybody, that whole team reads the scripts, and then we throw out ideas. We manage to sort of think about coursing and where we feel like courses might work best. At the same time, the artistic department is like, this play needs to go last or something. And so we're like kind of balancing that out and compromising a little bit, being like, but it's a salad, it has to go here, whatever, you know. So there's a little back and forth there. The artist receives a little more refined version of the dish that we're putting out as their course. After we've gone through a couple of rounds, and then they sign off or they say like, I hate spinach or whatever. And then we adjust from there. And but it really takes the team, the culinary team, and myself a bit of puzzling out, because we encourage the playwrights to write plays about whatever, right? So there's no theme every year. So you've got a play set in New Orleans, you've got a space play, you've got a family drama set in 1912, whatever it is. You got all these things, you've got to figure out what makes sense for each individual thing. And then as a meal, you have to consider what makes sense as a meal, right? So that's how that happens. It's crazy. It's fun.
So cool. That is so cool that, you know, food can help take you through that journey and connect or separate you from the difference of plays that are happening. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Like if you can imagine, like, and this has always been a goal of mine in the work that I want to develop in the future, is that like there is something about taste and that is a sense that theater hasn't really economized on it all. Like there's really, I mean, I know there's like a couple things where you could have like
economizing the pie in the lobby.
Exactly. The pie in the lobby. Right. But like, how do you actually do that so that like you are, there's taste happening as you're experiencing the show. So this is like one way that we're sort of able to do that. Mm.
So this question is kind of similar, but I think it'd be interesting to see how it is, you know, in the day-to-day residency, when menu planning, how much coordination happens between the chefs, the farmers and artists. And I know it's probably like a conversation that goes on because they all work in tandem so closely. And also how much of the food that you use in your menus day-to-day comes from the farm?
Yeah. So the menu planning, in terms of the artist participation, they essentially give us dietary restrictions. And if we really like them, they can give us some preferences that we might consider. and they just sort of, it's kind of dealer's choice after that. Like they're going to experience the food as they experience it. And if someone comes to us in the middle of residency and says, I've had fish 7 times and I hate fish, then we'll adjust. But for the most part, it's like they're there to focus on their work and be fed and not have to worry about it, right? So the coordination on in general happens after we get those dietary restrictions between the farm and the chefs. And of course, we're very seasonal. So everything is coming out at the time that it's supposed to come out. So you're not always going to have a farm fresh lettuce. Sometimes you're going to have a tomato, sometimes you're not. So we talk about what's coming out of the ground. However, we always like to have a salad on the table, you know, so things like that. So we talk about how to supplement if we need to supplement a vegetable here or there with various vendors. But for the most part, I would say that it's about 50% on the plate from the farm. And that is also with the knowledge that we aren't a ranch at all. And so we have a vendor for meats and things like that. And we do tend to put protein on the table at least once a day. We do like to go full vegetarian, vegan for several of the meals, but we have found that it is important to be radically hospitable towards the meat eaters as much as the vegans and vegetarians. Now, of course, there will always be vegan and vegetarian options on the table and sometimes a separate plate should someone have like a major dietary restriction or allergy. So that's pretty much the coordination. And then like literally the culinary fellow goes to the field the morning of the day of the thing and grabs a big bucket full of whatever has been harvested that the chef has asked for from the agricultural fellow and brings it on back to the kitchen and they get to work.
Cool. Yeah. Another question about the food. What was your favorite dish you have made as a chef at Rider? And also what has been your favorite dish that someone has made for you?
That's a great question. Okay. I'm from Texas, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I made taco night a staple. And then I do like to talk about the one time that I made a brisket so good that a vegan ate it.
Oh my gosh.
Which, you know, no shame. I don't, yeah. I feel very proud of that brisket.
That must be a great brisket.
Thank you. And then I will say that some food that someone has made for me, is gonna have to be the, oh man, there, I'm thinking about so many meals. I guess like, recently I had like a dinner meeting with my boss and some other folks. We were talking about a potential cookbook, and our chef, our culinary director made these like Gruyere herby biscuits, and they were so simple, but they were so good. Mm. Right out of the oven. So that's the most recent favorite thing I've had. But I love eating so much that I could probably tell you something at every table that's the best.
And I know for me, I recently had a dinner that, you know, I just keep thinking about, and it wasn't even so much as the food, because the food was, it was okay, but it was more of the conversation that happened, yeah, and the environment. And you know, especially after COVID, being able to experience meals with one another, it means so much. So I can just imagine the special meals that people hold with them after, you know, this program, and having to make that a priority is dining with others. That's such a special thing.
That's so insightful, Lindsay. Like I really think that I didn't realize how much it was going to be a missing piece in my heart until it was gone for a year. And I couldn't sit down with anybody but like myself and my partner, you know what I mean? So it's been great to see on the horizon, the meals coming back and the programming coming back in that way. Mm. Yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is just a very like random question. Do the artists stay by themselves whenever they're making their art? Like, do they have special rooms for that? Do they sleep in their own, you know, areas? What does that look like for the artists?
Yeah, great question. Cause there are definitely different ways to approach it. We have communal housing, but everyone has their own room. So we have two structures that house probably around 12 people total in their own room. But there's like shared bathrooms and shared living spaces as well. So the communal living also adds to the communal experience, the tables and things like that. And we just find that it's, you know, there are different programs that will siphon people off in little cabins and things like that, which is totally great for, you know, your really intense, like, I need to be isolated and bang out this novel or whatever it is. But we've found that actually, like, the facilitation of the relationships with the communal living, in addition to the communal meals, is actually fosters, like, resounding success. So we've heard from the artists that have, you know, been in residence. So people say like, I got so much done, or I had a breakthrough because I was having a conversation with this person or whatever. And like, those things can happen if you're not residing together.
Do you offer workshops for the artists to do together during their time there?
Yeah. So this wasn't something that we had done before, but because of the pandemic, we felt that there was a need, an artist we're calling out for restorative practices. So there are workshops in like herbology that our farmers do in gardening. There's knife skills that our culinary director teaches to the artists, and as well as yoga and meditation twice a week. So those are offered this year for the first time, and we're finding that they're resoundingly successful. And so I'm sure we'll continue those workshops. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think we have time for one last question. Cool. There been a dish you're working on that you're really excited to showcase for people post-COVID as people start to gather?
I'm always working on things, but I will say in October, I'm going to a culinary residency, actually, and I'm going to be not working, but actually working on my work, which will be interesting. At this place called Marble House in Vermont.
I love Marble House.
Yay. Okay.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So
I'm so fresh on their program. I want to do
it. Oh my gosh, you should apply. I was technically supposed to go in 2020 and we all got deferred. So part of what I'm working on two things there. First, is that I'm working on a kind of theatrical writing and understanding of my own Southern food background. So I'm taking a lot of, like, I have this family recipe book that I'm sure people have seen or have, or like maybe like cards or whatever, maybe passed down. So I have this recipe book. And in it, there's like three different versions of corn casserole, whatever that means. And so what I want to do is like work through like those three recipes and like figure out what my family was trying to get at with those recipes for corn. And also in collaboration with a partner of mine, we are going to be working through several of Edna Lewis's cookbooks. And we're going to be thinking about, because that there's so much of the roots of Southern cooking within her work. And so it's kind of a exploration in a Southern heritage kind of cooking and where Edna Lewis began with all of that. And so hopefully there's some kind of theater piece with food that comes out of that. But again, it's exploratory, but I would say corn casserole is what I'm trying to figure out right now, which is weird and Southern.
That is, oh my gosh, that's so exciting, especially about Lewis work. I wish we had more time to talk about your personal work and how you combine theater with art, you know, personally, whenever it comes to the writing, because I think that's so interesting. Oh, sorry, food and theater.
Sure, yeah. Well, we can keep talking someday.
We can keep talking.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you guys so much. This was such a fun I too wish that it was longer than an hour, because I was serious about if we can have Ratatouille be one of your next plays for writer.
Yes.
I can also be a creative consultant on that, because I love Disney.
Great.
You know, so I'm just gonna planning for graduation, you know. But thank you guys so much for your insight and just your thoughtfulness, and it was a lot of fun. So audience members, if you want to see what it takes to be in Lindsay's seat as a student moderator for future episodes, or if you would like to be a future guest, please click the link posted in the chat to fill out the submission form. You can also email us at craft@chatham.edu for future information. If you have suggestions for future guests or topics, feel free to access this link as well. A survey should pop up as soon as this webinar is ended. Please fill it out to give us feedback. A link to the survey will also be provided in a follow-up email. Follow us on Instagram and Chatham at Craft Chatham. Also follow Space Writer at, I will let Kate do her plug because I will mess it up and I don't want that.
That's okay, yes.
Yes. And then stay tuned for next week. That's our final episode where all the student moderators and myself will get together. We'll talk about these past episodes, talk about like the brainstorming and what brought us to the topics that we wanted to talk about, and eat some food that will be symbolic of each episode. So please feel free to join us for that fun conversation. And Kate, tell us a little bit more about how we can get involved and plug yourself a little bit.
Sure, yay. So you can always follow us on Instagram at Space on Ryer Farm, or Facebook or Twitter. In addition to that, I want to make sure that I think I've mentioned it a couple times in this conversation, but we have a fellowship program, and we have a specific culinary fellowship if that's something you're interested in. We also have arts administration and we have agricultural. All of those fellowships work in their various departments, but also work across the organization. So you're gaining the skills in your specific place, but also, you know, helping in all the other ways too. So it's definitely a diverse experience. So those applications go live typically around January. However, so you can keep checking back, but I will also make sure to email you, Ani, and you, Lindsay, when those applications go live, and you can help spread the word. I will add you to the distribution list when those happen. We also, if you'd like to apply to be a resident, an artist in residence, if anyone's interested in that, those applications typically open around October. And so just keep an eye on our social media for that, because we do a big sort of like countdown to da da da. Yes, so that is space. Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you so much.
To both of you guys.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah. This was fun. All right, I'll see you guys next week and have a great day.
All right, thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.